This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Justice. It's a great word, isn't it? We love watching movies about it, TV shows about it. Justice. Why is justice important for a society, every single society? And you can read the books, the history books. Throughout history, leaders, rulers of societies knew that justice was important. But why is it important? Well, because human beings, they have to have not only a set of rules, you can do this, you can't do that. You're allowed to do this. You are not allowed to do that. They not only have to have that, well, there has to be some sort of punishment for when you step out of line. That's not a revenge thing. Very different. That is a message to the rest of society that this is what happens when you step out of line. If you break these rules, this will happen to you. And what that does is, it gives all of society a sense of peace and order and calm. People generally know, everybody knows, there are going to be bad things that happen. There are going to be bad people. There are going to be crimes that are committed. That is a given. It's always been that way. It always will be that way. We are fallen, sinful souls. Everyone knows that. So what we need as a society is a sense that, okay, when someone does evil, when someone does wrong, there will be a punishment for it. Here in the United States of America, we are going through something right now that is bigger than COVID, but that's what we're going to focus on for now. We have this system where there is no justice if you are powerful enough. If you are in the government, a medical society, media people, you can get away with the most egregious sins imaginable. We will watch you commit those sins, and then we will watch you practically gloat while you go free. And what it does is it's so much worse than one guy going free, you know, an Anthony Fauci or something like that. It's so much worse than that. What it does is it sends a message to all of society that there's no justice here. This is a lawless land where the people in power, they'll do what they want. You, peasant, you better do what you're told, but the people in power can do whatever they want. I have for years now been screaming that we need a reckoning for what happened during COVID. We must have a reckoning. And you can call it vengeance, that's fine. I'm not going to lie to you. I do want vengeance. There's no question about that. But for the good of the country, for the sake of Western society, we must have people put on trial. People must go to prison for this. They must. People have to lose their livelihoods. They have to lose everything because they took everything away from others. They must watch their colleagues lose everything over lies so they don't tell those same lies again another time. There must be a reckoning. It must happen. It must be severe, and it must be public. I didn't say that because I was angry, even though I was. I didn't say that because I wanted vengeance, even though I did, and I do. I said that because I care very deeply about my country. And unless people are punished for the medical tyranny that was installed in this country because of the flu, then what will happen is it'll happen again. You know, there's going to be another one. I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know if it'll be a disease, whatever. Pick your panic. There will be something guaranteed in the future, and the people with authority, the people with a podium, when it happens, they're going to stand up in front of you and they're going to issue these tyrannical rules. Do this, don't do that. You're not allowed to do this. And next time it's going to fall on deaf ears because we watched the lack of justice this time. For instance, Anthony Fauci. Remember when he said this about the lab leak?
We still open up and keep always an open mind as to whether or not this had to do with a virus that was isolated out in the environment and that came into a lab and then had what most people refer to as a lab leak. I believe that is less likely that that's the case, but I also believe we need to keep an open mind and have all possibilities be investigated. But the evidence from the virology community points strongly towards a natural occurrence.
Yeah, you know when he said that, he knew it was a lie? Did you know when he said that? We know all this now. When he said that, he was busy covering up the fact that he knew it came from a lab. It came from a lab he was involved in, the Wuhan Lab of Virology. You see, he was involved in that lab. He was involved in some way in the creation of COVID-19. When it came out, he didn't come out and say, oops, we screwed up, this is what we should do. Instead, he used his significant position of power to lie. And maybe the most grating thing isn't that some government stooge would do something like this. The most amazing thing is how smug he was about it, because he knew he was going to get away with it.
Senator Cruz told the Attorney General, you should be prosecuted.
Yeah. I'd have to laugh at that. I should be prosecuted. What happened on January 6th, Senator?
Just laughing. Mocking us. Lied, destroyed lives, destroyed freedom, destroyed businesses, destroyed the dollar. And then laughs and snickers. I wonder where former CDC Director Rochelle Walensky today after telling all these lies.
This is becoming a pandemic of the unvaccinated. Our data from the CDC today suggests, that vaccinated people do not carry the virus, don't get sick. So it's really quite safe for you, the vaccinated person. It's not safe for the unvaccinated person, especially if that person is taking off their mask.
If you are unvaccinated, we would recommend not traveling.
Yeah. They said that over and over again. What is it, safe and effective?
The thing that went right was the investment over decades in the basic and clinical biomedical research that allowed us to make a vaccine in unprecedented time of less than a year that turned out to be safe and highly effective.
They are safe and so effective.
We know that vaccines are safe and effective.
The data is so compelling that these vaccines are safe and effective.
Vaccination not only prevents you from acquiring severe illness, but we now know with certainty that it largely prevents transmission.
My gut feeling is that these vaccines prevent infection and therefore will prevent transmission.
The vaccine not only prevents people from getting sick, it also prevents transmission of the virus from person to person.
We're vaccinating so very fast. Our data from the CDC today suggests, that vaccinated people do not carry the virus, don't get sick, and that it's not just in the clinical trials, but it's also in real-world data.
Safe and effective. Hey, Senator Johnson, how safe and effective was it?
A memo that is apparently from CBER Director Dr. Prasad in December 2015, where apparently within FDA you're reviewing, I think it was 96 autopsies of child death following the COVID mRNA injection. In that memo, Dr. Prasad writes, "This is a profound revelation. For the first time, the U.S. FDA will acknowledge that COVID-19 vaccines killed American children. Healthy young children who faced tremendously low risk of death were coerced at the behest of the Biden administration via school and work mandates to receive a vaccine that could result in death. In many cases, such mandates were harmful. It is difficult to read cases where kids 7 to 16 may be dead as a result of COVID vaccines. Putting these facts together, it is horrifying to consider the U.S. vaccine regulation, including our actions, may have harmed more children than we say."
Safe and effective. People have to go to prison for what they did. Talk to Dr. Aaron Cariotti about the medical profession, the censorship, the evil Next. We got to have energy. You just do. Real natural energy. And your mood, let me ask you this, especially fellas. Are you more down than you used to be? Depressed, down, maybe you just get down randomly. Listen, testosterone levels are in free fall because we're drinking synthetic estrogens. It's not your fault. It's in the plastics, it's in the water, it's freaking everywhere. And we have to be proactive at reversing that. Proactive. You can't cross your fingers and hope for the best. We know there's a problem. That's why there's a low T clinic on every corner. But do you think you should be jamming needles in your arm? You need natural herbal supplements from Chalk. Specifically, I take a male vitality stack from Chalk, and I have for 4 years. You want to feel great all the time like I do? Go to chalk.com/JesseTV and get a subscription. Chalk.com/JesseTV.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that. Can you be informed without being all of those other things? We think so. Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty, the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We try to bring you the truth
and help you figure out this crazy modern world.
If you shoot at us and we deflect it, it doesn't really count. And that just doesn't make any sense. You got to make a rule. Don't shoot at the United States.
Or if you prefer, Iran, blah, blah, blah.
America haters are winning. The would-be communists, the Marxists, are winning in America. And they're doing so openly, and nobody cares.
I think giving the downtrodden money enables them. They aren't getting the money. I'm winning.
Good Lord, that was the voice of the patriarchy right there, folks. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In terms of actions, Alex, that we have taken, or we're working to take, I should say, from the federal government, we've increased disinformation research and tracking within the Surgeon General's office. We're flagging problematic posts for Facebook that spread disinformation.
There's a big difference between dumb and evil. And that's one of the things that struck me so much about the COVID era. People get things wrong. Right? Even doctors get things wrong. Medical people, everyone gets things wrong. I got that. But it was the censorship that really clued me into, wait a minute, we're dealing with evil people here. I'll never forget it. I know it was recent. You remember it. I remember it. But I will never forget how quickly this country turned into some sort of pseudo-medical tyranny. Joining me now, someone who has been bravely speaking out about this for a very long time, Dr. Aaron Cariotti, author of the wonderful book, Making the Cut. He has some ideas on how to fix our disastrous medical system in this country. Doctor, again, it was the censorship that kind of made all my warning bells go off in my head that, wait a minute, I don't know anything about these things, but that seems evil to me.
I completely agree, Jesse. Thank you for that introduction. I found myself nodding my head the entire time. It was the same for me. Being on the receiving end of censorship during COVID convinced me that we were heading in a very dark direction because, as you said, people can get things wrong. People can make mistakes, even huge mistakes that impact others, as we did with our misguided pandemic policies that turned out to be so harmful and unhelpful. But the thing that really set off alarm bells for me was when we as a society became a place in which you were not allowed to ask questions, because that is the core feature of totalitarian systems, the prohibition of questions, the inability to raise your hand and say, hey, wait a minute, I'm not sure these cloth masks are actually very effective, or hey, wait a minute, are these products really safe and effective after being rushed to market? Instead of sitting down and debating with people who had those entirely legitimate and now we know perfectly justifiable questions, you were excluded from polite conversation, you were silenced, you were literally censored, not just by private actors like Google, Facebook, Twitter, and other social media companies, but we now know that people were censored on those platforms at the behest of the government. And that was the burden of proof in our Missouri v. Biden case, which we recently prevailed in. The courts essentially endorsed a settlement decree where the government admitted, in fact, that they had done exactly what we had alleged in terms of coercing, pressuring, browbeating, jawboning, whatever word you want to use, these social media companies to do their bidding. And one of the things that we discovered as we got documents on discovery, as we did our depositions, is that the social media companies actually did try to push back. They did try to resist government pressure, and they were beaten down over time relentlessly in a clear and very egregious violation of First Amendment free speech rights. And as a society, we just cannot live under that kind of regime. I like to tell people, this is not a partisan issue. The case that we filed in federal court was called Missouri v. Biden, and the egregious violations of free speech that we identified did occur under the Biden administration. But the fact is, I don't want President Trump or the next president, whoever he or she might be, to have their hands on those kinds of levers of power to be able to control the flow of information online. This is not a partisan issue. This is a constitutional issue that all Americans should care about.
Doctor, Missouri v. Biden, can you go into more detail since you have the details? What exactly did they do? You talk about the levers of power. What exactly did they do to pressure Facebook or whoever if they were unwilling to censor what turned out to be the truth? What did they do to them, or what did they threaten them with?
So they did several things. In some cases, it was an identifiable government official actually sending a list of people to throttle to Facebook or Twitter, saying, take down these posts or take down these accounts. So I have an article in the Wall Street Journal called The White House COVID Censorship Machine that was co-authored with one of our lawyers that described a man named Rob Flaherty, the White House Digital Communications Director, basically sending emails to a senior executive at Facebook saying, we want these, you know, 12 accounts taken down. Facebook came back and said, well, we removed half of these, but the other half we don't think violated our terms of service. And instead of accepting those, the senior official in the White House said, people very, very high up in my office are really upset that you're not acting on this. And of course, when you work for the President of the United States, the person on the receiving end of that communication knows exactly who you're talking about. And basically, we're going to make life difficult for you if you do not comply with our orders. We're going to do things like remove Section 230 liability protections, which without going down into the weeds, Mark Zuckerberg said, if the government did that, that would be an existential threat to our business model. Basically, it would make us liable for things like libel or slander for anyone who posted anything on our platforms, which would be untenable for the companies to monitor those things and to verify those things. So basically, the government said, we're gonna change our policies in such a way that it will make it impossible for you to operate your business. And so the social media companies felt that they had no choice but to comply. Now, to their credit, Zuckerberg went on Joe Rogan's podcast last year and admitted that this had happened, admitted exactly what we had alleged in our case, and he publicly apologized for it. Now, whether he was sincere or he was just, you know, testing the political winds and, you know, trying to cozy up to the new administration, I don't know his intentions, I don't know his motives. But he made a public apology, which is a remarkable thing for the CEO of a company like that to do. The CEO of Google sent a letter to Jim Jordan, basically admitting the same thing. Of course, Elon Musk opened communications at Twitter after he purchased Twitter, and the so-called Twitter files that independent journalists like Matt Taibbi and Barry Weiss published showed also that what we were alleging in the case was happening at Twitter as well. So that's one of the ways that the censorship was happening. But the more subtle and actually the more scary way in which it was happening was, in some cases, the government was not just saying, take down accounts A, B, C, and D. It was saying, change your algorithms, change your terms of service such that this kind of content will be suppressed. And in some cases, the social media companies did that in response to the government pressure. This is how you got tens of thousands of Americans being censored literally hundreds of thousands of times, which is why the district court judge in our case said that this is arguably the worst violation of free speech in United States history. That wasn't me or one of the other plaintiffs. That wasn't one of our lawyers in the case saying that. That was the federal judge who looked at the evidence that we presented. Because in this new digital age, if you get control over things like the algorithm at Facebook or Twitter, you can impact countless Americans who are trying to express their views on online, not just journalists, not just sort of professional communicators that have a microphone, but ordinary Americans just trying to voice their concerns about the government's policies. So previous free speech cases before the digital age were usually a one-off thing. A government official would pressure a book publisher or a newspaper to strike out a few paragraphs from this book or to suppress this one story. That's bad. That's obviously unconstitutional. But what we saw starting in 2020 in this digital age was the government literally trying to control the flow of information online, and the scope and the reach of that censorship enterprise turned out to be really astonishingly vast.
Doctor, I want to touch on this aspect of the case before we move on from it. I'm happy it went in your favor, but you'll have to forgive me. I'm looking at the whole country, and I think I'm happier for the country, because for me, in my stupid non-legal mind, that tells me maybe this case, the way it was decided, maybe that will put a check on future government abuse. Because you and I both know these people are not, they're not going to change their ways. They're controlling little tyrants. They're going to want to do this again. Doesn't this case give us a leg up in the future?
It does. It puts a dent in this censorship machinery. Obviously, we have to continue fighting. One case is not going to solve an enormous problem like this. But this was a good start. I think the case did two things. And people sometimes say, well, the consent decree looks like it applies only to the plaintiffs. What about everyone else who is censored? And the fact is, look, if you're censored, you now have a precedent in federal court. You have a ruling endorsed by the courts saying that what the government did was wrong, describing in detail what they did and saying they can't do this anymore. And so people can now bring analogous cases. And instead of looking back like the circuit court did and saying, basically, we have no precedent for the kind of thing that we're seeing in this case. They said that when they were looking at our evidence. Now the courts can say, no, we do have a precedent. Missouri v. Biden, you know, the court found basically this. And if your case is analogous, we're going to easily fall back on that same ruling. So precedents in federal court are really important for establishing legal continuity, basically. So that's the first thing that it did. But the second thing, I said from the beginning, it's important to fight this battle in the courts, but it's also important to fight in the court of public opinion. So while the case is going on, we're publishing articles, we're going on podcasts and news programs like this one and explaining to the American people what we're finding, right? And so we're putting this agenda, this issue on the agenda, on the map for the American people. And I like to point to the last vice presidential debate before the election. And the last question that was put to J.D. Vance was, you know, don't you think because of J6 and all the rest of it that your running mate is a threat to democracy? And his response was, no, I think the real threat to democracy is the censorship that has been happening, the government censorship that's been happening for the last several years on an industrial scale. So that was a clear signal that this issue was now on the map. Day one in office in January, President Trump issued an executive order vowing to take down the government's censorship machinery, to study the problem internally, find out what's happening, what's going on, and dismantle that. So one reason to file a case like this is obviously you want a legal victory and you want some redress for the injustice against the people involved in the case. But a second and more important reason is to set a precedent for future cases. And a third reason that I think may be the most important reason of all is that you can get on discovery information that you otherwise would not be able to obtain from the government or from these private companies. And you can broadcast that information to the American people because in a court case like this, all the information is made public unless the court seals it, which they didn't do in our case. And so that just shining a bright light on the issue and telling people what's going on, to me, that's the real value of the Missouri v. Biden case.
All right, let's focus on a more uncomfortable aspect of this. We touched on it in the very beginning, the medical censorship, because all the censorship did not come just from the Biden administration. Yeah. The medical community, I remember how you were treated, and others like you, the brave souls who were out there, it was terrible. It's by medical associations, fellow doctors, all these things. Yeah. I'm concerned about that and what it might mean for our future. Has that changed? Is it going to change? Can you touch on this?
I share your concerns about that. And unfortunately, when you have private individuals or private associations like medical societies or hospitals or groups of physicians doing the censorship, you don't have the same kind of legal redress, because the First Amendment applies to the government, right? It doesn't apply to private actors who can act in various ways to suppress otherwise constitutionally protected speech. And that's a very serious problem. It's a very serious problem if the platforms themselves, private companies, are doing the censorship. That makes it much harder to address the issue legally. And what happened, I think, as a society is we got caught up in, you know, what my colleague and friend Matthias Desmet called a mass formation, a sort of mass hypnosis, where we scapegoated certain ideas and certain individuals and decided we were going to exclude them from the realm of reasonable conversation. And anytime a society goes in that direction, it's headed toward dangerous waters. Have we turned a corner on that? I think we're seeing some cracks in the edifice. So on the positive side of things, for example, the wheels are coming off the sort of gender ideology infecting contemporary medicine. So what advocates call so-called gender-affirming care, what's more accurately described as sex-rejecting procedures, it's possible now to basically raise questions about that without necessarily being kicked out from the medical community. So that's a positive development. I think we've turned the corner on that craze, on that other example of mass formation within science and medicine. Just the other day, this David Moreno fellow was indicted, right? He was Anthony Fauci's right-hand man. Basically, he's being investigated for charges that he was involved in a cover-up of COVID origins, the fact that COVID almost certainly leaked from a lab in Wuhan, that the technology and the science that was used, the gain-of-function research to develop COVID, probably was funded by the National Institute of Health. Much of it probably occurred at the University of North Carolina, this researcher named Ralph Baric, before it was exported to the scientists at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. So we're finally, after how many years has it been now, we're finally getting some real legal action. And of course, Moreno is the tip of the iceberg when it comes to digging in and asking questions about COVID. I think he's been served up as a sort of sacrificial lamb, right? Anthony Fauci was given an unconditional pardon by President Biden before he left office. So he's very unlikely to be indicted. But we've at least got someone who is close to Fauci, who's indicated, you know, basically he said publicly, if I go to jail, I'm going to sing like a bird. And so I'm going to throw all you other people that didn't protect me under the bus. And so I think some people are running for cover now. And I'm cautiously optimistic that at least some aspects of what went wrong during COVID may begin to come to light. But we've got to keep the pressure on. This is why, you know, journalists like you who keep asking these annoying, inconvenient questions and who won't let these issues go away. I mean, I understand many people in this country are sick and tired of hearing about COVID and want to just sort of forget it and move on. But the fact is, if we don't learn from the mistakes, from the disastrous decisions that we made during the pandemic, we're only doomed to repeat them when another real or manufactured public health or other crisis, other state of emergency is presented to the American people, we're going to fall into the same traps all over again if we don't actually learn from what happened. So there are some signs of positive developments, but we have to keep the pressure on in order to move those things forward.
Can we talk about this Wuhan Virology Institute? Because when you talk to the low info, the normie American, and you explain to them that they went to work today and the government took 25% of their income and some of that income went over to the institute that created COVID, you can just see their eyes just bugging out of their skull with the realization. They're either looking at you like you're a nut job or they're thinking, is this entire world insane? How do we get to a place where we're working to send money to China to make viruses?
The story is so demoralizing that it's hard for ordinary people, as you said, to wrap their heads around it, which is one of the reasons I think that they've gotten away with it for so long. The crime is so massive, just like, you know, Stalin's crimes with the gulags or the Nazi crimes with the Holocaust. People looked the other way for a long time. They didn't want to believe it because it was just so awful, right? But we have to face the fact that this is actually what happened. And why did they do that? Well, I mean, if you listen to their reasons, it's we have to do this gain of function research. And by the way, gain of function is a euphemism. It's bioweapons research. It's taking viruses and making them more infectious and more deadly. That's what it is. Now, the people who want to defend that kind of research will say, well, we have to do it because the other side is doing it. We have to do it so that we can develop quote-unquote countermeasures like vaccines to defend ourselves in case China develops a super bug, a super virus, right? So that's the ostensible reason why we have to do this extremely dangerous research. I don't think that reason is plausible. You see the same kind of reasoning with the proliferation of nuclear weapons, right? We have to build more nuclear weapons because the Russians or the Chinese have them. And so this sort of mutually assured destruction mentality operates. I don't want to get into the ethics of nuclear weapons development, but the fact is no nuclear weapon has accidentally walked out of a nuclear silo on the back of someone's shoe and just sort of detonated by accident. Right? So we have at least so far been able to control the accidental release of something like a nuclear weapon, as terrifying as those things are. We have not been able to control the accidental release of superbugs that we create with gain of function research. The Wuhan Institute of Virology's leak of COVID was not the first time that this has happened. It happens every few years with various high security, so-called BSL-4 laboratories around the world. And in most cases, it doesn't kill as many people as COVID did. It might kill some people in the local population. There's a former journalist from Atlanta that used to cover the CDC who's written a book about this, basically going through every couple of years, there's a lab leak. And in some cases, the virus proves deadly, at least for a handful of individuals. So the wrong bug getting out in this way can do enormous damage, as we saw during COVID. And so I think this argument that we need to be doing this is just exceptionally dangerous, and we need to put a stop to it because American scientists were almost certainly involved in the creation of, at least the creation of the technology that led to COVID, if not that particular bug. The changes that were made to the spike protein seem to have been developed by Ralph Barrick at the University of North Carolina. The Wuhan Institute of Virology itself received NIH funding through an intermediary called the EcoHealth Alliance. These facts have now been fairly well established. And the American people need to look at this and say, look, we don't want our tax dollars going to this sort of reckless cowboy research that basically has complete disregard for the potential consequences of what they're doing.
Pause on that. We'll be right back with more. Hire Americans. I am so passionate about this now, and I'll tell you something else. I probably should let this go because you don't want to live in the past. I'm angry at young Jesse because young Jesse never cared about it. Never cared at all about hiring American, patronizing companies that hire American. It just wasn't something that entered my mind. Whatever, just give me cheap prices. But hiring Americans is really important. We know that now as we see our country being handed away to foreigners. Pure Talk hires Americans. When Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile send those American jobs overseas while charging you a fortune, Pure Talk's charging you way less while hiring Americans. The customer service experience is, dare I say it, pleasant. They're not just Americans. They're nice to talk to, helpful. You can switch in 10 minutes and save a fortune. Their CEO is a Vietnam veteran. Switch to Pure Talk and switch now. PureTalk.com/JesseTV.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
But you do want to be informed.
Can you be informed without being all of those other things? We think so. Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty, the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
If you shoot at us and we deflect it, it doesn't really count. And that just doesn't make any sense. You got to make a rule. Don't shoot at the United States.
Or if you prefer, Iran, blah, blah, blah.
America haters are winning. The would-be communists, the Marxists, are winning in America. And they're doing so openly, and nobody cares.
I think giving the downtrodden money enables them. They aren't getting the money. I'm winning.
Good Lord, that was the voice of the patriarchy right there, folks. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Doctor, I actually want to talk about something positive before we get back to all the ugly things going on in the world. You know, you see these stories of these rare now in America diseases popping up. You'll get a story out of, you know, Los Angeles. We have tuberculosis coming back. And I don't think we understand here in the United States of America how blessed we are to have moved past so many things the rest of the world still struggles with. Can you explain why we move past them? How did that happen? How's that possible?
Yeah, so thank you for flagging this, because when you see these stories trying to create new panics about new, typically it's infectious diseases, you need to recognize that this is propaganda that's being advanced by people who have a particular agenda, by people who want to go back to the COVID playbook and run it all over again. So I talked about this in my 2022 book, The New Abnormal, which ostensibly was a book about COVID, but it was really about the future. It was about how do the things that happened during COVID, how are those going to be deployed in the future? So you remember after COVID, the so-called monkeypox scare that was drummed up, that turned out to be a nothing burger, right? And again, you see new examples here and there if you're paying attention of these efforts to scare people into thinking that we're never going to go back to the old normal again. Anthony Fauci actually published a paper in a peer-reviewed scientific journal called Cell, where he said people should never shake hands again, literally. Like, this threat of so-called emerging infectious diseases is so pervasive and so ongoing, and it's not just COVID, it's, you know, it's disease X, we don't even have a name for it. It's a fill-in-the-blank disease that might come and hit us in the future, that we need to basically live with things like permanent social distancing, and which is just not only completely insane, but it's anti-human. Human beings are social by nature. The worst form of punishment, you know, beyond the death penalty, the worst form of punishment that we can inflict on an individual is to put them in solitary confinement, which is a state in which eventually you literally lose your mind. You start developing hallucinations and delusions if you do not have human contact for a long enough period of time. And there's quite insane people who are not real scientists. They're only interested in social control. that want to establish patterns in society and levels of surveillance and control in society that would separate us from one another. It's hard to think of a social program that's more nefarious and evil than that. And they're using the threat of new infectious diseases in order to accomplish that very dark political agenda. So you said we were going to talk about something more positive, and I don't know how we got on this subject, but yeah, I mean, this is something that Americans just need to be aware of. We need to do the same thing that we did with the monkeypox scare, which is just to laugh at and to say, look, I'm not worried about that. That's a disease that's spread by, you know, high risk sexual behaviors and by dirty needles. And so go away and leave me alone.
Doctor, speaking about the kind of people that possibly are going into medicine now, I think back to this video from Columbia University graduation, med school graduation, and I can't get this out of my mind when I consider the fact that I'm getting older, parents, mom getting older. At some point in time, there's a hospital stay coming for all of us. Is this the future of medicine? Go ahead.
I promise to self-reflect diligently, to confront unconscious prejudices, and to develop the skills, knowledge, and character necessary to engender an inclusive, equitable field of medicine. Let us bow our heads in recognition of the gravity of this oath. We swear to faithfully engage with these ideals and obligations for the ongoing betterment of medicine and humanity.
So, this woke mind virus has infected medical education. They're screening in and screening out medical school applicants in large part based on ideology rather than based on competence and academic merit and character. So this should be a very serious concern for all Americans, because physicians, when they treat patients, need to set aside their ideological and political prejudices and give every patient, whether they agree with them politically or not, whether they happen to like them personally or not, they have to give them the very highest level of medical care, which is what the original Hippocratic Oath was about. Rather than the blather that we just heard in that clip, the original oath said things that people care about, like, I won't use my knowledge and skills to kill you. I will try to heal you. I will minimize harms. I will maintain your confidentiality. I will not exploit your trust to do things that are not related to health and healing. Those are the things that patients want to know that their doctors promised publicly in this solemn oath. So it's important for us to return to a traditional Hippocratic medicine and get this kind of political ideology that we just heard in that clip out of medical education.
I know there are probably legions of people watching this saying, well, this is all fine and good, but Dr. Aaron Cariotti is not going to be my doctor. How do I go find a doctor like this? Is he even available out there anymore? They feel like these kinds of doctors, your kind of doctors, are not available to them. Are they?
Yeah. So there are good doctors out there. I, a couple of years ago, co-founded a new medical society called the Hippocratic Society. Go check out the website, hipsoc.org. We're growing. We are in several dozen. We have chapters in several dozen medical schools now. We're going to develop chapters for community physicians in private practice. There's a great hunger for this among medical students. So I can say with confidence there are good people going into medicine that are not infected by these kinds of ideologies. And the Hippocratic Society, HIPSOC-affiliated physician would be a good place for you to start if you want to find someone who adheres to a traditional Hippocratic ethic within medicine. So don't despair. I can attest that there are many, many good doctors out there. There's many people, many trainees in various med schools all over the country that are hungry for this kind of community, this kind of fellowship, this kind of professional formation. And so you wanted to end on a positive note. That's one, I think, really positive development. I like to say that sort of structurally, we're sort of, if you've heard of the Federalist Society for lawyers, we're sort of the Federalist Society for physicians. And I'm hoping this will also, you know, help to reestablish trust that at least many people within medicine are there for the right reasons.
HipSoc.org. I like it. Doctor, thank you so much. I appreciate you. Final thoughts. Next.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
But you do want to be informed.
Can you be informed without being all of those other things? We think so. Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty, the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
If you shoot at us and we deflect it, it doesn't really count. And that just doesn't make any sense. You got to make a rule. Don't shoot at the United States.
Or if you prefer, Iran, blah, blah, blah.
America haters are winning. The would-be communists, the Marxists, are winning in America. And they're doing so openly, and nobody cares.
I think giving the downtrodden money enables them. They aren't getting the money. I'm winning.
Good Lord, that was the voice of the patriarchy right there, folks. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Reckoning is about justice. It's not about revenge. And I know it's 2026 and we're all focused on, you know, gas prices and other things. And I'm not arguing with that. Of course, that stuff matters a lot. But we still have to see people go to jail. People have to be punished for what was done to my country and your country. And I continue to pray that we will see that justice one day. We'll be back.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.